so many things to talk about. Now, the last thing he talks about is true religion. Religion is a word that's upon the lips of many, many people. Some people say, I don't want religion. Well, everybody has some kind of religion. But now here he's talking about pure religion. True religion. Religion and the true nature of it. The meaning of the word is not salvation. It's not synonymous with that. Nor necessarily synonymous with the word Christianity. But it has to do with outward worship. In other words, the expression of what's on the inside. We mentioned that pure religion was love. Now, there are three basic examples that he gives in the last two verses of James. And now, these are not all the examples, just three. But it gives us a clear vision of what really true basic religion is. One of them, the controlling of our speech, the bridling of the tongue, which is discussed in detail in the third chapter. Secondly, the doing deeds of benevolence or visits. We'll discuss that in a little bit more detail today. Thirdly, living a pure and separated life, being unspotted from the world. Now then, let's take a good close look at it again. Let's read that 26th verse once again. If any man among you seem to be religious, note the emphasis on seem to be religious. That is, our having outward religion. But he bridles not his tongue, but deceives his own heart. That man's religion is vain. Seems to be religious. Now these words would indicate that there are and can be counterfeits among the genuine. Here's a man that seems to be religious. If any man thinketh himself to be. Let me read just a few verses. Here's one from Matthew, the 7th chapter. Jesus is speaking, and here's what he says. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. This doesn't mean that by working we're going to get in. But what he's saying is, if you are born of God, he said this in previous chapters, if you're born again and born from above, you will be keeping his commandments. The first epistle of John deals much on this. He says, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have we not cast out devils? And in thy name done many wonderful works? And then I will profess unto you, and please know what he says, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Now he knew who they were. But I never knew you as far as being a child of God's concerned. Judas is an illustration. Judas had all of the symptoms outwardly of being a religious man. But he didn't have the genuine. He did miracles without question because Jesus sent him out. Now, I'm not going to go into the detail why Jesus sent him out and all of that, because he knew from the beginning who was what. I'm not discussing that today. Because that's a wrapped up subject all in itself. But what I want you to note is there are people just like that. I may be talking to some who have mere outward religion, trying to do your best, saying, Lord, Lord, even going to church and having worship and so on. But you've never been born from above, and it isn't a natural thing for true Christianity to come out from within. In 1 John, the 2nd chapter, in the 19th verse, he says this, they went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have continued with us. But they went out that they might be made manifest that they were not of us. The King James puts in the word, they would no doubt have continued. But please note carefully, the word no doubt is in italics, which means it's not in the original, it's an interpretation of the translator. So he plainly says, in the original he says, they would have continued with us if they had been of us. But they went out from us, because they were not in us. So you see, he says, there can be counterfeits among the genuine. And the person may not know it. That's why I'm taking so much time here to examine yourself to see whether you be in the faith, whether you really be born again. Then he gives three examples, three out of maybe hundreds of examples. Example number one, that bridleth not his tongue. The tongue is the index of the heart. There are so many sins of the tongue, but whatsoever a man is within the heart, that he will speak. You can't get away from that. I've often said, and I repeat, you can tell what's in a man's heart by listening to him pray. Because you can tell, as best man can tell, what's really in there. God, of course, knows the genuine. But the tongue is giving an illustration here, is the index of what is really in the heart. There are many sins in of the heart. Lies. Filthy talk. Are you carrying on some of that? That's a good sign what's in your heart. Swearing. Evil speaking. Now, the more general word today is just plain gossip. That's what's in your heart. If you're habitually doing this, I don't mean that you may, in a pinch, tell a lie. Or somehow some word slips out that you didn't want. Or that you said something about somebody for which you feel very sorry afterwards. Because if you are born of God, the Spirit of God will make you conscious of what you've done. But evil speaking or gossip, habitually being done, is a fairly good sign, he says, that there's nothing genuine on the inside. For whatever what is on the inside, what the heart is, that the tongue will speak. However, a controlled tongue is not always a sure evidence of true Christianity. It's only one of the things. All of the others. Now, there are some people who are not necessarily Christian, but they wouldn't ever say anything bad about anybody else. They do have somewhat of a controlled tongue. But over on the negative side, an uncontrolled tongue is good evidence that there isn't true Christianity there. Now, we have noted that James approaches the whole subject more or less negatively. That's why some folks don't like it. But we have to sometimes dig out the negative side so we can see the positive side. That's really true. But he says this man, if he bridles not his tongue, he deceives his own heart. Self-deceived. He thinks he's a Christian. He thinks he has true religion. But, and he can fool himself. And maybe he really does fool himself. As I said, I fooled myself for 5 years. Now, you can't fool every person. But you never, never deceive God. His religion, in other words, his outward show, he calls it, is then vain. It means it's empty, not real. It's useless, unreal. It's a counterfeit. Remember again what we read to you from Matthew 7:21. Not everyone that says unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom or see the kingdom of heaven. Then, secondly, he speaks of it as being pure religion and undefiled. Let me read the 27th verse. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this. Now, before we discuss what it is, just want you to know what he says. Pure religion, which is undefiled. Now, pure is the positive approach to the subject. In other words, unmixed with foreign substance. Undefiled, again, is the negative approach. Is undefiled. Then he says, speaking of visiting, that's the positive side. Unspotted from the world is the negative side. We want to discuss this. So we note then that pure and undefiled religion before God. Underline and circle the word before God, not before man. A man may seem to be pure before other men, but here it is, before God. God puts the x-ray upon us. He looks deep into our hearts. The approval of man is simply not enough. That's the important thing. The approval of God is absolutely necessary. I invite you, friends, to read the 139th Psalm. Read it in several different translations. But especially, just read it. Then when you come to the last two verses, you will begin to understand why David, who wrote this psalm, spoke these words. When he was awed with the presence of God, the God he knows all about him, The God who sees through him. He says, you know all about my lying down, my pathway. You're acquainted with my ways. Not a word that I speak, you already know all about it. Everything you know about me. Therefore, he says, and listen carefully, the last two verses of Psalm 139. Therefore, he says, search me, O God. This is a very strong word in the original. It means put the x-ray on me. Look straight through me. And know my heart. See what is there. Try me. And know my thoughts. I can't do it myself, he says. I may think I'm all right. And see if there be any wicked way in me. Then he commits himself and says, now you lead me in the way everlasting. This is the great thing, friend. Let God search our hearts. If any man seem to be religious, pure religion, before God and the Father, is this. Then he names what it is. Number one, to visit. Visit the one who cannot return the favor. Here is a good test. In other words, it reveals the heart of the indwelling Christ. For it says, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's his heart. He didn't wait until we could return the favor. But while we were yet sinners, he so loved us that he gave himself for us. 2 Corinthians 8:9. He became poor that we through his poverty might become rich. In other words, he showered his love, his visit to this earth, upon those who couldn't help themselves. He says, this is a good test of whether it's genuine and pure. We like to do favors to somebody, and people with plenty of religion, they do favors to somebody that will give them back. My parents were missionaries among the Hopi Indians. And one thing he said about these Indians was, they would often give you gifts, but they expected something even greater in return. That was just the way they lived. That was not the pure religion. But when you give, when you do something for those who cannot return your favor, as he says here, visit the fatherless, visit the widow in their affliction, people who cannot return the favor, that, he says, is a good sign that there must be something on the inside. And then the third statement he makes is, and keeps himself unspotted from the world. Keeps himself. Now, there's something that we have to keep. Something that we have to do. Keep himself. Now, he's not saying keep his salvation. I read in 2 Timothy 1:12 that Paul says, for I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that he's able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day. He's able to keep that. Now, that has to do with our salvation. Or as Jude says, in verse 24, now unto him that is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy. There are certain things that he keeps. God keeps our salvation. And secondly, God will provide a clean pathway for us to walk on. But while he works in us, 1 Corinthians 2:13, he worketh in you both to will and to do. It is not just automatic that there is without my cooperation. I do not have to do anything. He says, work it out. 12th verse. Not a do nothing, and he do it all. But he works to will. He works to do as we cooperate by faith. Faith means venturing forth with him, trusting him, going out with what he says. In 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, in the 22nd verse, this statement, neither be ye partakers of other men's sins, but keep thyself pure. Or as we've already read from Jude, this time, however, the 21st verse, he says, keep yourself in the love of God, looking for mercy. So I say again, there's something we have to do. Keep thyself unspotted from the world. I want to go in more detail with this matter of the world and being unspotted from the world on tomorrow's broadcast.